Welcome to Lost Cast. This is Lost Cast 11, centering around the latest episode, What Kate Did.
Yeah, I'm ready for another episode called Where Did Kate Learn to Kick Butt? That seems like it'd be, you know.
The Anna Lucia school of kicking butt. Yeah.
Thanks everybody for joining us. We're gonna move on through quickly today, and I'll get right into the outline and tell you all the stuff we're gonna be talking about today. We're gonna hit some listener comments, get some general reactions to this week's episode. Of course, a lot of interesting things came up of the episode being Kate centric. We've got her backstory, and we've got the Jack Kate kiss and the whole, you know, I hate to go into the romantic stuff into detail, so we'll hit that kind of lightly, I imagine. But then there's also the Sawyer Kate relationship as it develops. There was that missing piece of the orientation film that came in, and a lot of interesting things about the way it was presented. Echo's story about Josiah. Possibly the missing piece looks like it may be from another film. Is it a inconsistency on the TV show? We'll talk about that. Why was it missing? Why would someone cut it out? We're going to go into some theories about that. There seem to be other pieces missing from that film as well. There seem to be other cuts. We'll discuss that. And how does Desmond, you know, we have to, now that we're so far into the hatch this episode, we have to talk about Desmond a little bit. Michael's interaction with the computer, the big whammy at the end, was that really Walt? We'll get into it, tell you what people are talking about. There's a lot of updates out there on the Hanzo Foundation website, some new little pieces to the mystery going on. And then, of course, once you get through all that stuff, we're going to go into some Lost links. Got some really interesting things to talk about with the official Lost podcast. John Geeler finally got a question answered on the Lost official Lost podcast, and so we'll talk about that. Talk about, you know, our sort of positioning in the iTunes top 100. There's an interesting parody out there online of Michael and Walt's conversation on the computer. And there's a guy out there in forums saying that he's an insurance adjuster for the Hanzo Foundation. We'll talk about him. It's really good stuff. And then we'll talk a little bit about what we're going to be doing. We got a huge break right now. What are you guys going to do? I'm kind of excited for the break, actually.
I'm a little upset that we didn't get, you know, we didn't get anything when we saw the preview on this last episode, that they didn't say, hey, by the way, we're leaving for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
That would have been nice.
But as far as the Lost cast go, we're going to have one, I believe, you know, it tis the season for a Christmas Eve Lost cast. And so we'll be doing one of those the week running up to Christmas. So stay tuned to the website to find out when we're going to post that. And I think we'll probably cover some new theories and new developments and just kind of cover the overall conversation as it's happening out there. And then we're going to have Brian McMillan. He's got a spoiler cast for us today. Is that right?
Yeah.
All right. Way to go, Brian.
So just kind of jumping into the listener comment stuff. We got a lot of listener comments this last week, but the interesting thing is that a lot of them are really centered around more overall theories and stuff like that. We didn't get a lot specifically related to the latest episode. but the one that we did get, and something that Brian kind of touched on, we got a comment from a guy named Kevin Batchelder. I'm sure I'm pronouncing his name wrong. It's probably like Batchelder.
Batchelder. Yeah.
But he basically asked, he said, we have, you know, 5 weeks, whatever it is, 6 weeks, without any new episodes. Is really going to suck. What will you guys do about the podcast? And Brian kind of touched on it, but we're basically going to be taking a little break. So we are going to, as Brian mentioned, we're going to try to do a more theories-oriented podcast, or things that have been kind of open-ended plot things that haven't been talked about. We're going to try to do that right before Christmas.
I have to say, we got an email this week, and I forget what the guy's name was. But he sent us a theory, the sort of overall theory for Lost, and he said, I can't believe you guys missed this. And I read through the email, and it is very, very interesting stuff.
It's a good theory.
And so we'll have that theory to talk about and a bunch of other stuff. And so we're going to really try to stick close to just what happened in this episode. And I think that, you know, those theories will come around. It'll be a nice, exciting episode. We got a lot of great reviews of our last theory cast. Some people thought we spent too much time going off on the crazy aspects of the Philadelphia experiment stuff, but I think it's good to explore those references all the way down to the wire, even if it gets crazy, just because they're interesting stories. Philadelphia experiment. I think that was our seventh Lost Cast, the Theory Cast, for those of you that might want to jump back and listen to that.
Yeah, it's a good one. I would say that, you know, over this break that we have, it'd be great if you haven't listened to our previous podcasts. You know, go back and listen to some of them. They're definitely worth revisiting. And we're also, I think, too, the break is going to give us some time maybe to make some updates to the site and do some of that general kind of media stuff.
So. We're gonna maybe try to pretty it up a little bit. It's you know, a shame I'm a graphic designer and I should really take a greater hand in designing that site.
John, pride in it.
John's getting on my case all the time. We need a masthead. But, and also, this break is a great time for all of you out there who haven't watched every episode or are just starting to watch to go back, get that first season on DVD, and catch up with the show.
And I'm sure a lot of people are going to be getting that thing for Christmas this year.
Oh, yeah.
I know, so.
Yep. So
that'll be
really
good.
Cool
stuff. And send us anything, too. I mean, if there's something that you want us to address in that podcast before Christmas, send us your thoughts. Let us know if there's anything you want us to touch on that maybe has been lost by the wayside or anything like that.
We'll jump on it, absolutely. So, Robert, what did you think of this episode?
I really like this episode. It answered some questions about Kate. You know, basically, what was her original crime? We all now know what that original crime was. And I think a lot like what we got out of the Anna Lucia episodes from before, that I biffed the way I pronounced.
Anna Lucia.
Lucia.
Robert.
Sorry.
She's not a Chia pet.
She's not
Lucia.
Although she does have some hair issues, which you might touch on later.
We will talk about magical bangs.
But, you know, it makes you kind of, you sympathize for her a little bit more now that you know what the crime was. Or I do anyway. I know what the crime was now. You know, it was in almost defense of her mother, so you know that it was it wasn't a crime of stealing from someone else. Granted, it was murder, but it was almost a defensive type murder.
Yeah.
So, but you kind of sympathize with her a little bit.
While it did answer a lot of questions about how she got the marshal chasing after, it brought up a lot, I think, some more questions, or I guess highlighted some greater questions, which are, how did she get, as her stepdad said, murder in her heart? You know, what is it that has made her someone who's so prone to violence and so proficient at violence?
Yeah.
Well, but it was stupid violence. I mean, she got the homeowner's insurance policy and then blew up the house. I mean, as the marshal put it, that's amateur hour. I mean,
well,
come on, you could have found a better way to get rid of him.
But the execution of the explosion was pretty well done. I mean, she seemed to wait, and as she was riding away.
It really
with
blew
the
up.
Motorcycle.
It blew up.
Her in the background.
Yeah.
She should have set up a digital camera to get a shot of that.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I thought this episode, I really liked this episode, and I think that it was great to have an episode where I got as excited as I did. Like, when I saw the film in there, I was like, oh, wow, you know, this is going to be good.
Well, and the fact that they showed us the film, I was really worried that, as I was watching the clock, I was like, they're not going to show the film.
Yes,
they're not going to show it. So I thought that was just going to be a tease.
Yeah, and that right there, what you just said, made it the quintessential ideal Lost episode. You had a mystery that was brought up that advanced the sort of mystery side of the plot. You had a really great human drama, a lot of really good character development going on, and they had something out there that you thought they were going to leave as a cliffhanger. I was like you. I paused at one point and saw there was 1:09 left in the show, and I was like, they're not going to show me the clip. They're not going to show me the film. Not only did they show us the film, they brought up the whammy that you weren't even expecting as a cliffhanger, which was great. It's nice to have a cliffhanger that you don't even know is going to be there. They set you up for one cliffhanger and then twist it around and give you something else at the end, which was Michael supposedly talking to Walt, presumably. Possibly.
Now, I will tell you one thing. I haven't been happy with what they've treated is. The merging of the two groups, we haven't seen the interrogation or the sharing of information.
It's still not to that point yet, it seems.
I think there's
like.
Been a little bit about that. I mean, it was good to hear the characters when Michael was in the hatch after they showed him the film. They showed Michael the orientation film, and Echo saw it as well. It was good to hear the characters in that kind of a calm dialogue about what's up with the computer. You know, Michael was asking for all the details. He's like, well, how does that work, entering them in all the time?
Yeah.
And I got the sense that, from what Locke was saying, that everyone in their group does their part. Everyone in the group has seen the orientation film and knows what's going on. And so I like the idea that they hinted that there are these deeper discussions going on with the people behind the scenes. And I think that...
Okay, but it's just now coming up from Locke and Echo's conversation that there was another hatch. I mean, why didn't Michael say, or Jin or someone say, hey, there was another hatch, didn't have any of this cool stuff in it. Wasn't pimped out.
You'd like this one.
You would think that would have come up.
More people would be, you know, a lot more curious about, you know, they've seen this other hatch and now they're coming here and there's all this stuff that's different.
Well, Michael's curiosity satisfied for that for me, because he was rooting around all those caves. He did get deeper into the hatch than anybody else did. And you know, Sawyer woke up, and I liked the fact that he thought he was saved.
And the other people are...
His hopes were dashed.
The other people are too busy getting it on, you know?
So we know Jin is. I mean, by the way that episode ended, you know he had just conquered something. I mean, he is out there all proud, his chest puffed out.
Let's get it on.
Yeah, so the general reactions online have been pretty much the same. On the fuselage, about 50% of the people on that were rating this episode as great show, one of the best. And 32% definitely above average episode. So, I mean, the general reaction
82%
is pretty good. I mean, that's
80% good. That's good.
That's pretty good. There were about, I think on the fuselage one, I believe too, that about 5% of the people said it was the best episode of Lost ever. And on lost-forum.com, about 9% of the people said it was the best Lost episode ever.
So. I wasn't too crazy about Kate running around, you know, trying to figure out whether she was sane or not for seeing the horse. You know, that... I was kind of, there was that scene where Michael and Echo and Locke were talking about the film and everything going on, and that was really interesting. And they cut away to Kate walking up to Saeed asking if he thought she was crazy. And he did say that he saw Walt.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a lot of,
so he said
a couple episodes ago, you know, Shannon was seeing Walt in the woods before she died, and Saeed didn't believe her. And then finally, at the end, Shannon was there and saw Walt and asked Saeed if he also saw Walt. He said he did. There was a lot of controversy online, people saying that he just said that he saw Walt because he loved her and didn't want her to feel like she was crazy. So finally he says...
I thought it was pretty clear that he saw
her. I thought it was clear too, but it puts that sort of thread to rest, along with the other thread of whether or not Anna Lucia shot Shannon.
One of the other things... one of the other
had to throw that in there.
I had to throw that in there, just rub it in a little bit.
One of the other things, we got a comment from a guy named David Mankey. And again, I'm probably mangling the name, but he said, I loved the show last night. The spiritual parable in my mind was great. It was cool to see Locke and Echo start to bond, he says, but I was a little disappointed by the missing piece of the film. Did I miss something, or was it a little lacking in information? And I thought this was something that we talked about a little bit.
Yeah.
It did obviously talk about, you know, communication, and we'll get into this more when we talk about the missing piece specifically, but I was a little let down by what we got out of it.
I think on face value, it was pretty simple and kind of like, that's all there is. But once you start thinking about the motivations behind cutting it out and all that sort of stuff, and we'll talk about that later, it gets a little more interesting beyond just the content of the piece. Think about more the story of its cutting as opposed to the story that's within that piece of film.
So we're going to move on to talk about Kate and a little bit about Kate's backstory. And I thought kind of one of the most poignant things out of this was we see yet another character on the show that has parental issues.
And they all got daddy issues.
We got a lot of comments that were centering around this. And I think it's becoming pretty blatantly clear.
Yeah.
That this seems to be a pretty good thread between everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know what to make of that. I don't know if that's intentional. You know, I've on that Lost poster, it says the sort of headline for their poster is "Everything happens for a reason."
Yeah,
that's a pretty bold statement to make, considering all the little details that we pull out. But, you know, is everybody that ends up on this island has some sort of parental issues. Is that for a reason?
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, I guess the idea becomes, is the fact that they had parental issues something that made them, you know, kind of chosen to be there?
Yeah.
Or, you know, I mean, what is it? What is that connecting thread? But it seems to be, I think, one of the more kind of prominent connecting threads between the characters.
And it makes you wonder if older characters like Rose and Bernard, do they have parental issues as well? What were you going to say, Bernard?
But well, you also see it, though, that with Walt and Michael, it's Michael's the parent, so is Walt having issues with him? God, the hot blonde who just had the baby, I forgot her name. Is that going to be
Claire.
The parent? Claire. Is
Claire.
That, is she the parent who's going to have the issues? I mean, so it's interesting that we have a couple generations to deal with. You have Jack, Kate, Sawyer, who and Locke, who obviously have their parents' issue, their parental issues. Then you also have the kids who could have their parental issues. Yeah. So interesting that we get a couple generations.
And I think it's interesting too. I mean, one of the kind of plot threads that we seem to have that's kind of a constant running issue is, you know, will these characters repeat mistakes of the past? Part of that may even be, you know, like in the case of Michael and Walt or Claire and her baby, you know, are they going to be able to overcome whatever issues, parental issues they might have had with their own kids or
maybe Walt
like
was
that.
Taken because they were getting over their parental issues. The other's like, oh no, man, you got to have parental issues.
Yeah.
You're out of here.
You know, he's got a good argument too because he's like, hey man, I know you're griping about how your dad was mean to you. He's like, but dude, my son was stolen by sea billies. So,
how many of you have had a kid stolen by sea billies?
Yeah. Yeah, stop talking. My son was stolen by sea billies. I can just see like I can see like a Jerry Springer with like,
yeah.
like Michael on there. It's like, so your son was stolen by sea billies.
Today on Jerry Springer, kids, our parents whose kids were stolen by sea billies. Right after the break.
That's a good. That's a Dr. Phil episode.
Yeah.
So one of the other things,
is that working for you? Sea billies working for you?
Yeah.
Sorry.
One of the other interesting things to talk about is, and obviously this was something that was thrown in there. We have this Jack and Kate kiss.
Yeah.
And we don't dwell. We're not a romantic podcast. We don't dwell on these things.
Thank
very
God
much.
We're not a romantic podcast.
In fact, I would say we probably go as far as to try to stay away from the whole Kate Jack obsession thing. But I mean, this thing. I was like, when I was watching the show, I saw that scene, and I was like, man, they're just stirring up trouble.
Yeah,
they're just trying to. I mean, I can see connections, you know, to the plot, but it seems like something that was definitely thrown in there to keep that tension really high between Kate and Sawyer and everybody.
But I have to say I felt bad for Jack. Because, you know, Jack's been wanting to kiss her for so long. You know, when Sawyer said he loved her, Jack was like, hey, that's not working out for me. I don't want you to love her. And then finally he kisses her. And she doesn't just say, oh, Jack, you know, we're just meant to be friends. She doesn't try to take it easy on him. She stumbles away from him in fright. She looks back at him with a look of terror, like he just grew five more heads or something. And Jack, you know, that'd be hard to do if you kiss a girl and she runs away from you like a monster. And Jack does what any self-respecting guy would do, and he goes off to get wasted with a sexy ex-cop with a record of excessive force.
That's right. And, you know, the thing that I think is really interesting is, number one, I think Jack has horrible taste in women. Right, because if he has both these like really troubled, like one who's like on the run for murdering someone, another one who's
what kind of choice? What kind of choices does he?
But
have?
The thing that I thought is really interesting, and I think it puts a new perspective on the Kate Sawyer relationship, is that her backstory went into this whole idea of, you know, her kind of repeating the mistakes of her mom, where, you know, she said that Sawyer reminded her of her dad that she killed, and, you know, her, like, in the same situation as her mom, knowing that this guy is probably not the best guy for her, but still being so, like, drawn to him.
Well, you know, they say you marry if you're a guy, you marry your mom, in a way. And, you know, you marry someone who has a lot of traits of your parents.
You just took it to a weird
place.
That's
creepy, dude.
No, you know what I'm talking about.
I'm going to try and get this away from Brian's creepy parental issues.
I'm going to take it out of the creepy thing. That people tend that a guy will marry a girl that has similar traits that he grew up with in terms of how his mother acted and all that sort of stuff, and vice versa.
And people wanting to be either mothered or fathered by their significant other, you know?
Yeah.
You guys are gross. I'm just kidding. I just wanted to throw you guys under the bus.
Thanks, dude. And then back up.
Then back up and skip, put it in neutral, rev it and gun. Okay, what about the horse? The horse to me symbolizes freedom.
Yeah.
It's Kate's freedom or escape from the marshal. The horse runs out in front of the road, causes the car to go off. Kate then sees the horse and acknowledges it. In that portion,
it's a good. That animal is kind of a good fit to be paired up with her.
Yeah.
Well, so that might represent Kate. We know that other animals have almost been paired up with characters. Sawyer and the boar.
If you remember,
Walt and the polar bear.
You know, to back up with Sawyer and the boar, just to tell the backstory real quick, that it was the boar had ran off with Sawyer's tent, and he was bound and determined to get back at that boar, not only get his tent back, but to kill the boar. And in the frustrations of him dealing with the frustrations of dealing with this boar, he ended up dealing with much greater issues. Mm-hmm. Talk about transference. Hurley brought up the psychological technique phenomenon called transference, which is being mad about one thing and resolving another issue
He was talking about it in relation, Jack was chopping wood
really
crazily, and he came up and he was like, hey, you know, that's transference. Yeah. That's what they called it in the mental hospital or whatever.
Okay. Hurley brought up another mental hospital thing. And so, you know, Jack was mad about Sawyer, but he's taken out on the wood because it was transference. He was transferring his anger.
And Sawyer and the boar, too. I mean, Sawyer, that was transference as well.
He transferred all of his personal angers on this quest with the boar. And so...
Yeah.
So is there any meaning, then, to the fact that Kate saw the horse when she was with Sawyer, not with Jack?
Well, I think it's interesting, and I think the thing... It's a weird thing because the horse brings up a lot of questions, right? We have the tie-in back to maybe zoological experiments happening on the island. So these animals may in some way be connected to that.
There's a lot about white and black. We had a white polar bear, and now we got a black horse.
It's just backgammon.
The backgammon game with the white and black. Yeah.
But you didn't see what was very obvious, and I forgot what episode number it was, but on the shark, they showed that logo. They showed that Dharma logo.
Yeah.
And they
didn't
clearly show a Dharma logo on the horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was some speculation, right? Some people brought up they thought they saw a Dharma logo on the polar bear as well. But the thing that it brings up is, right, we have instances of what we assume are real animals. Mm-hmm. But then we also have, like, in the instance of the polar bear, there's at least some alluding to the polar bear that Walt may have been manifesting that out of his mind, out of his special powers or whatever, because we see the polar bear in the comic book that he has.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think that the interesting thing about this horse, and again, all the different instances of people seeing these animals, or even Shannon and Saeed seeing Walt, is it starts to bring up this question of what's real, what's imagined. Just because two people see it, does it make it real? Is there something else going on?
Well, I think that the writers, thinking back to Boone's dream sequence where Boone saw the monster, the writers were going to come up with showing the monster, but then they thought, well, people might mistake it for a reality when it's just a dream sequence, and we don't want to do that to anybody.
Yeah.
And so I think the writers or creators of this show are very sensitive about how they create reality for us. And so I tend to take everything at face value as what it is. And it's interesting, you know, you say you pair up Walt with the polar bear. We've paired up Sawyer with the boar.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now Kate with the horse. And what about the shark? It was Michael and Sawyer on the raft of the shark at the same time. And just now that we're pairing people up with animals, I wonder if there's a possibility there. But
you also have the fact that Jack saw his father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so we know a horse... it's possible to have a horse on an island. It's not possible, though, for Jack's dad to come back alive and start walking around.
Well, we know Walt really isn't there. They're seeing him, but is he really there? Yeah. I mean, I think the assumption has been that it's some type of an apparition or projection of himself.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say if two people see it, it's there. I remember with Jack seeing his dead father, the ghost of his father, you know, walking around the island, no one else saw it.
Yeah.
And, you know, he really thought he was crazy.
Well, and Sawyer really did see the boar because he got after him.
He
really took his tent.
Yeah.
So there's and Kate was hugging the horse.
Yeah,
I mean she physically interacted with it.
First of all, how killer is it going to be now that Kate can go, you know, tromping around the island on a horse?
Yeah,
they'll be able to cover a lot of ground really fast. Maybe she can get a suit of armor.
That'd be cool.
But there's really some interesting symbolisms, or I guess interesting relationships between the horse and past text of Revelations. 667 was brought up on the fuselage by a user named Beagle 1962. And Beagle 1962 brings up this Revelations quote. Now the Lamb opened the third seal and the third beast. The man told John to come and see. John saw, and I beheld, and lo, a black horse. And that sat on him had a pair of balances in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts say, a measure of wheat for a penny, and three measures of barley for a penny. And see thou hurt not the oil and the wine. And so it comes up, and it's one of the four horsemen. at the dawn of the apocalypse, and the black horse represents, I believe it's famine is what it represents. And then Vishanti says in her research on animal symbolism that Vishanti from the fuselage had kind of done, she found that the black horse in the Book of Revelations relates to a necessary balance of the male and female qualities of the soul. Riding a black horse represents a need to control the energies of the body, usually sexual. And Kate definitely has some sort of romantic relationship issues, to put it nicely.
Yes. I think that one of the descriptions I like the best was according to Chinese folklore and their zodiac symbols. Each animal is associated with certain personality traits, and the horse, those who are born in the year of the horse, are intelligent, independent, and free-spirited. And I think that fits Kate.
Yeah. Sure. So we're going to move on to discussion about the missing piece of the orientation film. And the clearest kind of beginning of us figuring out that there is this missing piece is Echo and Locke speaking. They actually sit down and they watch the regular orientation film. And then after this, Echo says to Locke, you know, there's something that you need to see. And so he gets out this this Bible that they found in the trunk in the other hatch. And he tells Locke, you know, I think that this is something that will help you. And we see, obviously, in the Bible that there is a missing piece of film. And this is really interesting. I think, again, I talked about, like, this was by far, I think, probably the most exciting part of this episode. And the first thing that Echo does is Echo tells Locke a story about Josiah. And he goes through this, and Echo doesn't seem to know it. We're not going to quote the story exactly, but we have a little bit of details on Josiah, and I'm going to kind of read through on Wikipedia, and we'll post the link to it. Kind of the story of Josiah. So Josiah was basically a king of Judah and son of Ammon and Jedidah, the daughter of Adiah and Bozkath. He's credited by some historians of having established Jewish scripture.
Bozkath decrees.
Sorry.
He's credited by some historians as having established Jewish scripture in written form as a part of the Deuteronomic reform that occurred during his rule. And so it says, when Josiah was placed on the throne of Judah at the age of 8 by the people of the land, the international situation was in flux. To the east, the Assyrian Empire was in the beginning stages of its eventual disintegration. The Babylonian Empire had not yet risen to replace it, and Egypt was, to the west, was still recovering from Assyrian rule. This favored the resurgence of the prowess of Jerusalem, which Josiah expressed in the 8th year of rule by a sincere championing of the God of Israel's cause. He had the foreign cultic objects of Baal, Ashtaroth, and all the hosts of the heavens in Solomon's temple destroyed, the living pagan priests dismissed from their posts, and the bones of the priests exhumed from their graves and burned on their altars, an extreme act of desecration against those pagan deities. The authors of Kings and Chronicles add to these acts in Jerusalem Josiah's similar destruction of altars and images belonging to pagan deities in the cities and tribes of Manasseh, Ephraim, and Simeon as far as Naphtali. And so you can find actually in the Bible in Kings 23 and in Chronicles 34, they talk about some of the story of Josiah in those parts of the Bible. It says, in his 18th regnal year, I have no idea what that means. Reigning, I guess, as a king.
Yeah. Go, is that right?
Josiah again worked on behalf of Yahweh, God, by having the high priest Hilkiah,
God bless you,
take the tax monies that had been collected over the years and use them to repair the neglect and damage the temple had suffered during the reigns of Ammon and Manasseh. So what happened was, while this guy was clearing the treasure room of the temple, it said that he found a scroll described as the book of the Torah, and that's in Kings, or as the book of the Torah of Yahweh by the hand of Moses. So, basically, following DeWitt's suggestion in 1805, many scholars have assumed this was either a copy of the Book of Deuteronomy or a text that became Deuteronomy as we have it. The guy who was cleaning out the temple basically brought the scroll to Josiah's attention, and the king had it read to a crowd in Jerusalem. He was praised for this piety by the prophetess Huldah, who made the prophecy that all involved would die peacefully. The fact this scroll was found during the restoration work is not unusual. The finding of old scrolls or inscriptions while making repairs to temples is an attested occurrence in the ancient Near East. Some scholars have also theorized the book was actually a symbol to help centralize power under Josiah. The book was said to be an ancient scroll of teaching found in the house of the Lord as a way to validate its authority. And it says in that same 18th year, he celebrated a Passover that had not been done in such a manner since the days of the judges, for it had not been done like this Pesach from the days of the judges who judged Israel. And Chronicles provides the most complete description of the celebration. So pretty much, I mean, we basically see Echoes telling this story about, you know, Josiah basically finding this book that would really become the foundation and resurgence of Jerusalem, kind of building this state up on God, on faith or whatever. And he's talking to Locke about it, and he makes a direct parallel. He says, you know, Josiah found that book that, you know, that became this part of the Bible or whatever, and here is this book I'm giving to you.
Yeah. And the book he gives to them is this strip of film that talks about not communicating on the computer, which I'm going to draw a little parallel between, a really brief one, between what John was just reading and this story that we have here. Like Josiah, we have Alvar Hanzo, a king in the Western sense of the word, somebody who is you know, extraordinarily wealthy and has a lot of power. Somebody who also, like Josiah, wants to do something for the betterment of mankind. And so he sends off a group of people to scour the treasures of scientific research to find that thing that he needs to recreate to better mankind, to recreate the human temple, if you will. Let me sort of make that relationship. And what we have here, in the story of Josiah, the crown jewel of that resurgence was this book. The crown jewel, I wonder, of this resurgence is, in fact, this computer. A book and a computer, really, a book is just a simple version of a computer. A computer is just data. A book is data. So I think that's kind of a way for me, in my own mind, to sort of marry the two stories together.
And I think it's a really literal, I mean, I think in the most literal sense, you know, Echo is giving this piece of film. This is, you know, like the scroll that Josiah found. So I actually thought
the
connections,
film.
I thought the film is really like the survivor or even Locke's kind of Bible. This is their Bible that tells them all the history of everything that's happened, and this is this one piece kind of that they're missing.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, and this is something I think that's interesting to be brought up, we start, you know, there are obviously a lot of questions that we start asking when we look at this film strip. We know that this is one piece. But I went back and looked at the transcripts.
I've got a transcript. Let me read it.
Of the film. We don't have to go through the whole film.
It's really...
I'm just saying there are points in the transcript film where it says splice or cut.
Yeah.
And there are multiple instances of them. This is one, and there are at least three or four.
There's one right after he says B.F. Skinner.
Throughout there.
There are a couple. Let me go ahead and read the transcript of just this new clip.
Okay.
It's really brief. Do not attempt to use a computer for anything else other than entering the code. This is its only function. The isolation that attends the duties associated with Station 3 may tempt you to try and utilize a computer for communication with the outside world. This is strictly forbidden. Attempting to use a computer in this manner will compromise the integrity of the project and, worse, could lead to another incident. I repeat, do not use a computer for anything other than entering the code. Now, that's not in and of itself very interesting.
Yeah.
What's interesting is, why take it out?
Yeah. Why take it out? And I guess, I mean, there seem to be two kind of theories floating around. One is, you take it out to prevent them from using it for anything else.
Prevent them from knowing it can be used for communication.
Yeah. But then the other side of it is, someone took it out intentionally to try to force them into using it.
Yeah.
So saying, hey, we know that, you know, if we take this out, people are going to get curious enough. They're going to start trying to do something.
Yeah. And go ahead.
Well, my opinion is, if they didn't intend for that computer to be used for anything else, why give a full keyboard on there? Why not just be a number pad that's all it does?
I
mean, honestly.
And there's a certain point where you got to suspend disbelief, because there's all kinds of, you know, Why make it a psychological decision not to do it? Why couldn't they just, you know, rig up the computer so it's impossible to communicate?
Yeah.
So, but another thing that I thought was interesting, and I forgot where I saw this online. We've got the links. We'll post them online. We've got a screenshot of.
Oh, I've got a link to the. We have it on the fuselage. I actually have. I think it may be the same thing.
It might be
from New Rave on the fuselage.
So there's a screenshot of the original film. And there's a screenshot of the new clip together, and there are some inconsistencies. Now I'm gonna caveat this by saying it's possible that these were inconsistencies by the continuity, the person in charge of continuity in the filming. So it could have been the filmmakers or the TV show makers who are responsible for this lacking sort of difference between the two shots. But in the new shot, you've got a little blur. Both shots have a blurred out exit sign in the background. On the new shot, it's pointing left. On the old shot, there's a little blur blip pointing to the right. Alvar Hanzo's hair is much
you
more.
Mean Marvin Candle?
Marvin Candle. I always make that. I always do that. We're going to find out that. I don't know. Never mind. Well, Marvin Candle's hair is gelled back pretty extremely in this new version. Hair looks particularly shiny, and his part is more dramatic. And the last thing, his lapel is shorter. In this new version,
it looks like he's wearing a different jacket.
Different jacket, and his tie, while it's the same pattern, the knot is in a different place. So the pattern is set in a different place than a knot, and a tie's knot is pretty locked down. In one shoot, that sort of thing doesn't change. And my question is, why wouldn't the TV show director or the makers of this film, I would imagine they'd do this whole strip in one shot.
And then just take out
the And then just take out that out, piece. Yeah. I mean, they would have to know what they were doing. And so it leads me to wonder if this piece of film, when people are speculating that it's from a clip of another Hatch, that it was created intentionally to be dropped. I mean, everything was so conveniently placed. The film strip inside the Bible, the glass eye, and the radio were so conveniently just arranged for them to find.
Someone wanted
that
them to find
that. Somebody wanted them to find that stuff. And so that kind of creates a new level of interest, I think, in this thing.
And it's interesting because, I mean, I think that I think a lot of people are kind of thinking, well, it's just inconsistencies. They just didn't have the foresight to shoot the whole thing at once. They shot the second scene separately. They tried to match it, but there were little things that were off.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also weird that, you know, if this was from a different Hatch or a different orientation film, it still fits completely with the film that they have. You know what I mean? So the film that they have, it's still addressing the same kind of section, but it brings up some interesting things. And the other thing, too, we talked about, you know, is the quality of the actual shot is much better.
The colors are a lot richer and warmer.
Yeah.
And I also found myself stopping repeatedly, kind of clipping through to find sometimes the light gets really bright, and I got his light's really bright, and I could see both of his eyes. And I was trying my best to figure out if he had a glass eye, and for the life of me, I can't tell.
Yeah.
I think he does.
Yeah, Robert thinks he does.
I think he looks older in the Splice film, too, though. He looks more aged.
BJL 1974, just a final comment, I think, before we move on, says, in another thread, someone pointed out the differences between the Splice film and the original. I agree with the theory that the Splice was from another orientation film, possibly the film from the place where Walt is. The warning about using the computer for communication applies to Walt's computer. I don't know that Walt necessarily has a computer. Earlier when Locke tried to hit keys to enter the code early, the computer was not accessing input. Then suddenly Walt said hello. Presumably it was Walt. The computer allowed the user to communicate. The Splice film warns that using the computer for communication could trigger another incident. Well, now that the Hatch computer is in communication mode, how will they enter the numbers? I think we're about to find out what happens when the numbers are not entered in time. I think that's an interesting thought, that now that they're using it to communicate, how do the numbers play into this?
Well, you know, and we'll get into this about the kind of Michael talking on the computer and all that stuff that happens. But one of the things, one of the last things on this orientation film missing piece that I thought a lot about was when I saw this section of it, one of the first things I thought was, you know what? I think Desmond has seen that. Because when we go back, and I actually went back and looked at the transcripts, and it said, he said in Adrift, Desmond says, listen carefully, type in exactly what I tell you, exactly, nothing else. So the thing is, I think that either either someone like Kelvin that he was with conveyed this to him, mm-hmm. or that he's seen that missing piece, yeah. and that maybe he was there before that missing piece was taken out or something like that, because he seemed very adamant about not doing just anything else with the computer, just the numbers.
Yeah.
That was when he was talking to Locke yeah. and having Locke enter them.
And I think we have to go back and say that, you know, he tore out of there pretty quickly. And he seemed to know where he was going. It's just it just all leads me to think that he wasn't giving them the straight story. Who knows what the straight story was? Who knows which version of the others he really is? There's a lot of kind of wild theories going on out there. Yeah. But we are going to see him again, I believe. I don't know if that's a spoiler or not, but I think we're supposed to be coming back across him in time. And going back to what happens, what was he expecting to happen if the number does time all the way down? And then then we can move into this discussion about the blast doors.
Yeah, we don't know if we don't even know if Desmond even really knew what would happen. I mean, yeah. it was just kind of like he may have been operating under the same condition, you know, they are now, which is, well, they don't know, but they have some information that might point to something very bad happening.
Yeah. So there are blast doors, and Jericho 73 says the blast doors seem to separate the hall with the magnetic room covered in concrete from the living quarters computer area. And so he was saying that it seemed like the blast doors would keep the computer in the living room area normal and would just shut down the hallway that leads past the electromagnetic area and out the door.
And I think I thought it was just the computer area. It seemed to me like it was just securing the computer area.
Well, to go back on what blast doors are, Belshap kind of was kind enough to find us a definition for people that aren't familiar with blast doors. Blast windows, I guess, are used in commercial and industrial installations designed to protect personnel, property, from explosions, explosion-borne missiles, etc. Tron 18X says, I think the blast doors are for protecting the computers. Who would seal themselves in a shelter, and why would there only be blast doors near the computer? Well, I think the doors are there to protect the computers from getting destroyed in whatever situation. Yeah. And Patty Cakes at
Patty
the
Cakes.
Ledge says, Baker's man. No. Patty Cakes says, I wonder if the arrow hatch looks so much smaller. Now, the arrow hatch is the hatch that the Tailenders, Anna Lucia and Echo's group, they had a little hatch that they lived in that had an Aero Dharma logo in it. And Patty Cake says, I wonder if the Aero hatch looks so much smaller than the Swan because the blast doors are closed. That would also explain why we didn't see a computer in the Tailies Aero hatch. Now, that's something
that's never really occurred to me.
And also, if the blast doors go down, is that hatch that our guys blew open to get in there, a back door, to get out once that blast door is dropped? And if that's the case, they could probably still get into that other hatch if it's got a back door. Yeah.
It's pretty interesting, and you know, I think one of the things that's really interesting about that is that it gets back to the whole idea that, okay, if the blast doors are down in the Aero hatch, in the Tailenders hatch, does that mean that the incident that happened was actually something that happened in that hatch, maybe mm-hmm. not in the hatch that they're in.
Right now. I think a lot of people think, because they talk about the incident in the film at the Swan hatch, that the incident happened somewhere around the Swan hatch.
It's interesting, too, because if you go back and you look at a lot of the transcripts from, you know, the orientation film, from some of the things that Desmond says, mm-hmm. they're really a lot more general. I think we remember them fairly specifically, or we kind of draw conclusions about them. But all in all, I mean, they're fairly general statements with a lot of these things. So
yeah, and I think that one thing we know for sure is whatever the incident is, I don't think it's destroying the outside world, because if it happened once, why would they care if it happened again?
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Michael and what happened with him on the computer. There's some really interesting conversation going around there. One of the first things I think we should talk about is kind of what he was doing as all this stuff was happening. So we have Locke and Echo in the other room watching this missing piece of the film mm-hmm. at the same time that Michael is kind of scouring around.
Yeah.
But he doesn't seem to be doing anything really active. He's not disconnecting anything.
We don't see him connecting anything. No. But is it just coincidence when you get to that point in the video
That happens.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's
definitely bad timing.
Yeah. Well, that's the only way they could do it, because if they
If they'd have done the video, then they wouldn't have been messing with the computer because they'd know that they were told not to, possibly. It just seemed like the most logical way to do it. And plus, they did it all in like 15 seconds. That ending, yeah. I mean, it was like there were 45 seconds left in the show. They had to get all that done really quickly.
Well, here's the thing that I think is interesting. I think a lot of people are kind of making the assumption that Michael somehow instigated this. And what I think is that it looked to me more like Michael's just kind of looking around. One of the things I thought when I watched the episode was it appears that the clock has stopped.
Yeah.
But someone on one of the forums said, no.
It's minutes.
It goes in minutes, yeah, and it only counts down seconds in the last four minutes.
The camera shot didn't hang on it long enough.
But the thing that I think is interesting is that, you know, the orientation film is saying don't use the computer to communicate with the outside world. It doesn't say if someone tries to contact you, don't talk to them. And really, in this case, the communication is really being instigated by someone outside of the hatch who types in hello. It isn't like Michael's just kind of all of a sudden sitting down and trying to do something other than type the numbers. Literally, hello is showing up.
Yeah,
on his screen, so it's someone communicating to him.
Well, he says,
"But they tell him not to enter in any code, though."
I'll go back to the actual quote: "Do not attempt or do not try to utilize the computer for communication with the outside world." And so, if the world's communicating them, he's utilizing it for communication with the outside world.
Well, no, but go back to the beginning. He says, "Don't do anything other than enter the numbers in the code." So,
Well, APC 28 kind of gets to the heart of the matter here, and it says, "Do you think that the person writing to Michael was really Walt? I personally think that it might be a trick from the others. It just seems too convenient, contrived that it would be Walt. I mean, it's the first time we've seen communication on the computer. And besides, did they kidnap Walt and then let him use IM? That's kind of a silly question mark." It's so many people think it's like, well, did they have internet back then? Well, they kind of did have an internet back then. But that's beyond the point. Is Walt on IM? Is the computer tapped into some sort of psychic IM? Are the others messing with them? Or something I haven't heard really any discussion about online, which I came to my mind right off the bat, is the computer some sort of artificial intelligent sentient being? And I emailed Matt Jones about this because I thought he would be the person who would know. I have in my head a memory of a sci-fi book, and I read a lot of Philip K. Dick back in the college days and a lot of sci-fi, of a computer that became sentient, became self-aware and could talk to people, and had sort of a harmful result on everyone else. And the only thing they could do to shut it down was feed it a number to sort of put it to sleep, give it something, some sort of piece of code to chew on.
Yeah.
And so is it possible that every 108 minutes they need to do that to keep the computer from trying to talk?
I think, the interesting thing is that I think there's a lot of speculation. I mean, we can go into this a lot in terms of who it is on the other end. I mean, again, is it a computer? Is it actually Walt? If it is Walt, is he possibly, is he somewhere where there's a terminal and he's being forced to put in numbers and he's abusing it now and trying to communicate with the outside world? I mean, all types of things.
Well, there's a little bit of past evidence with both ways, sort of, in how they've set up this show. Of course, we had the Ghost of Walt. I think it was in the opening or second episode this season where Walt talked about the button. He said, push the button, don't push the button, bad.
Yeah.
It was almost like either way it's wrong. So Walt appeared with an awareness of the button.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And then also, when Anna Lucia and their crew turn on their transmitter, turn on their radio device to try to find some help, they talked to Boone, who was up on the other side of the island with the fuselagers. And Boone was saying, what was he saying? I'm Oceanic Flight 815. And they said, no, we're Oceanic Flight 18. And Lucia said, no, it's a trick from the others. They're just trying to get us to talk to them to find us or whatever. Yeah. And so both of those sort of thoughts, whether it's the others tricking them or whether it's Walt on the computer, sort of have a base in the thinking of the characters or in things that have happened in the past.
And, one of the things when I was watching that scene, too, my first reaction wasn't, oh, Michael's talking to Walt, when we first started seeing other stuff show up. I thought my first reaction was someone who maybe is a higher up member in this organization or someone who is actually a part of the Dharma Initiative is seeing what's going on there or something like that, checking in. and saying, who is this? Who are you?
Yeah.
Yada, yada, yada. And then they got the whole dad thing.
Yeah. Well, like, the first thing I thought of, I thought it was an artificial intelligent computer waking up,
mm-hmm.
becoming self-aware. And then when it said, I'm Michael, it's saying, Dad, like, are you the person that made me? Are you my programmer? You
there know? Was some talk about...
That's a good way of looking at
it. Yeah, there was some talk about with Locke, because you remember before he let it run down really far. Some people were saying, do you think he actually got it in time? Yeah. Do you think maybe that's what prompted someone to contact and say hello and all that stuff?
Because you have to figure, if Walt's going to talk to his dad... Mm-hmm. He was able to project himself to Shannon and Saeed. Why wouldn't he project himself to
Well, he could project himself, but he could only talk backwards.
Yeah.
Maybe he needs a computer to talk forward.
So maybe he just needs to talk backwards in the first place, and then when it comes out, it'll be
maybe
right.
All that reel-to-reel, all that huge computer is just designed to reverse
speech.
Reverse
speech. In green text.
From the psychic
That's
world.
The sickness. People start talking backwards.
Yeah.
I want to talk about...
Before you, are you going to get into Lost Links?
No. I'm talking about the Hanzo stuff because this is relevant to the conversation that Michael has on the computer. So basically, there were some updates that were made to the Hanzo Foundation site, and it's the HanzoFoundation.org, and this is the official Lost site.
Yeah.
And one of the updates that they made is if you go to the page about Alvar Hanzo. On the Hanzo Foundation site, there's a little photo of him. And if you look at the photo now, when you go to the site, there's some little teeny tiny text that starts to kind of creep in on the right-hand side. If you click on that image, you get a little flash movie that pops up. And it goes through the same scenario that Michael saw on the computer. It says, hello, ? And then you see someone type in, hello. And then it says, who is this? ? And then the answer that's typed in is mole. M-O-L-E. That's as far as it goes. It doesn't say anything more than that, but we're assuming that, like the whole kind of challenge question that Desmond gave, mm-hmm. that mole is the correct answer or something that should have been typed in.
But a mole is also somebody who has infiltrated a group. You know, Goodwin was a mole.
I mean, this is definitely a very kind of nebulous thing that we're not really going to get much out of, but it's an interesting connection. Yeah. But the interesting thing that happens...
It's worth checking out.
...is that after this flash movie kind of goes through, there is a letter that comes up, a new letter. You know, we saw a letter on the Hanzo Foundation site
before about a virus. So after it says mole, the letter comes up?
After it says mole, you get this letter. And the letter that comes up says, and I'm gonna read it, it's addressed the Global Health Organization in Geneva, Switzerland. It's dated the 4th of October, 2005.
Huh.
So it's recent, and it's from to this guy who's a chief legal counsel for the Dharma Initiative and the chief communications officer, and it's from the Global Health Organization Executive Committee, and it's regarding the Hanzo Life Extension Project. And the letter reads, "My friends, given the current state of world affairs, it is more difficult than ever to guard against the continuing emergence of new threats to the population. And harder still to enlist the aid of international business community in combating these threats on both a local and worldwide level. Therefore, I would like to take this opportunity to thank you for your extremely generous contribution to our defense fund. The fact that you insisted upon the discretionary nature of the donation only edifies our belief in the philanthropic nature of your intent. It is my sincere hope that we can put the unpleasantness of our previous correspondence behind us." That's kind of strange. "And join together in order to move forward towards our common goal. Please accept my most sincere regret for reacting prematurely and in such a way as to jeopardize your important research at your Zanzibar facilities.
Zanzibar!
You may rest assured that in the future, any communication with your organization or any agents thereof will be handled with the utmost consideration and with every professional courtesy. I bid you good luck for the future and very best wishes for the success of all your various and dynamic endeavors. Should you have the good fortune to meet with Mr. Hanzo personally, please extend to him our most sincere appreciation and thanks. Would you also please convey that our doors are always open and that we would, in fact, be thrilled to meet with him at his convenience, of course. Yours very truly, Monsieur Jacques Mayot, Director General, Global Health Organization Executive Committee.
So the French are saying, hey, we surrender. We're not going to mess with you anymore.
They paid them off.
Alvaro Hanzo paid the
French. Alvaro Hanzo
paid off for the last memo that was issued about the meningococcal outbreak on the island of Zanzibar.
Yep.
They wanted access to it, and Hanzo wouldn't give it to them, so Hanzo just threw a bunch of money at the problem.
And so I think the other thing that this shows is that there obviously are experiments or something that the Hanzo Foundation is doing in other locations. And the fact that this is, I mean, there's also the connection, the fact that this is happening in Zanzibar, which is off the coast of Africa. Mm. I don't know. Maybe Echo has seen something like this before. Yeah. That may be part of it.
That's true.
Or
sea billies.
Now, there's one other thing that appears. So when I saw this new letter on the Hanzo Foundation site, I went back to see if anything else had changed. And so one of the things that I clicked on was if you go into their active projects and you click on the Life Extension Project, there is another letter that comes up. And this letter is a press release for the Hanzo Life Extension Project. And it says, for immediate release, the Hanzo Life Extension Project celebrates a milestone. And this is from Copenhagen, Denmark, on Wednesday, September 21st, 2005. And what it says is, the Hanzo Foundation Life Extension Project celebrated a milestone in the 105th birthday of experimental subject 626. Experimental subject 626, known to Hanzo Life Extension Project researchers as JOOP, J-O-O-P, is an orangutan originally harvested by British explorers in the early 1900s. In a telex issued earlier today from the Hanzo Life Foundation's experimental station in Zanzibar, Hanzo Foundation Chief Communications Officer, this is the guy who got that memo, commented that considering that the average lifespan of chimps in captivity is 60 years, this milestone is clear proof that the suite of transgenic technologies that comprise the Hanzo Foundation's Life Extension Project will someday help human beings achieve useful lifespans well beyond the current norm. While the technologies used by the Hanzo Foundation to extend the life of JOOP, the orangutan, remain the closely guarded intellectual property of the Hanzo Foundation, Enarsson went on to comment that the Hanzo Foundation feels it's important to let the world know of its progress in this vital area of human endeavor. It is the will of our founder and chief executive officer, Alvar Hanzo, that all concerned citizens of the world understand the breakthroughs being made by the foundation. JOOP the orangutan was judged to be in perfect health by the Hanzo Foundation veterinarians and spent his birthday playing games as well as continuing the advanced language and learning programs set for him by Hanzo Foundation linguistic researchers. And this is interesting. The last quote, he says, barring an unforeseen incident, we fully expect Master JOOP, he's referring to the orangutan as Master JOOP, to be with us for many years to come, concluded Enarsson. So this is interesting. I think it brings up a lot of stuff. I think one is this orangutan is harvested from somewhere. Is it possible maybe it could have been harvested from this island that we're at? I don't know. Maybe the animals on the island have some unique thing like we talked about with the horse.
There was
I don't know. This is crazy.
There was a book called Ishmael I had read a while back.
Ishmael's great.
Yeah, about an ape. Which learned to communicate with people, and he ends up teaching this guy about the sort of the wrong ways of industrial civilization and all that sort of stuff. It was a really, really awesome book. Check it out, Ishmael, on Amazon. But that made me think of that when you said, advanced communication abilities of this old ape, and I instantly thought of Ishmael, and instantly thought of, wow, that'd be cool if they ended up meeting some, crazy ape.
Yeah, maybe the ape is on the other end of the computer.
Master JOOP.
That's the
vision with like a smoking jacket, mm-hmm. and like a pipe.
Yeah.
Master JOOP. Well, I actually thought the Master JOOP thing made me think about all these Eastern religious connections that have, with Namaste and all that stuff. Like, is he like a kung fu master?
Probably.
Ooh, kung fu orangutan.
You know, there is a movie called Kung Fu Chimp out.
Yeah,
it's worth.
Is it an orangutan, not a chimp?
Well, I think it's interesting. I think it brings up interesting stuff. Like, I think this Zanzibar thing is really interesting. And this orangutan, I mean, we're obviously seeing, if this has connections, I don't know, to the zoological stuff as well, or the animals on the island.
Transgenics.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into our Lost Link section now. And the first thing I'm going to do is talk about the official Lost podcast. That happened this last week. There were a couple things that were interesting that were brought up. A few things that they brought up. Okay, I should say...
There were things that they brought up? Is that what you...
There were things they brought up. That's what... I'll say that one more time. So there are a couple interesting things that were brought up, and some of this may actually get into some spoiler territory. So if you're really sensitive about spoilers, there's nothing too big here, but if you're sensitive about spoilers, you may want to turn it off now. But there are a couple of things they brought up. They did talk about in this last podcast, official ABC podcast, they did say that Desmond will be coming back. They said they alluded to the fact that there may be some Desmond flashbacks happening in the future.
Is this a spoiler cast, you think?
I already gave the spoiler.
I was watching your email, sorry.
The other thing is that flashback may go back into some of the history of him in the Hatch and with Kelvin. They also talked about Rousseau, who's kind of fallen along the wayside. They said that people on the forums call her Danielle, he said, but all the writers call her Rousseau.
Writers are so smart.
But he said we might be seeing an episode entirely in French happen.
Oh my god. I surrender.
Vive la France. Vive la France.
Oui, oui.
Just smoking.
Wait, that's Spanish. French. Sorry.
That's French.
Yeah. Viva is French.
They're so...
I'm told. I took 2 years of French. I took 4 years of French. I should know a Viva.
I don't know.
V is...
So they said...
I use Viva paper towel.
Viva France.
We may also have some flashbacks of Rousseau coming up. One of the interesting things is that they talked about is apparently in one of the previous episodes, they talked about one of her lover, Robert, that he had... Someone had lost an arm that was with them, and they talked about some connection between Marvin Candle, who they talked about missing that left hand, and
the podcast,
and this person, yeah,
they talked about him. So they officially came out and said his hand is missing.
His arms.
That Marvin Candle. They said he's missing.
For his left arm is gone.
They said his left hand is fake.
Yeah.
Nothing about the eye.
They didn't talk about the eye. But they also brought up, and I didn't know that Robert. I thought that was Danielle's wife, but they said something about
Daniel's
her lover.
Husband. His wife? She's a lesbian?
No.
Or his husband. They call Robert Rousseau's lover, not her husband.
Okay.
So, anyway, so one of the big things that happened in the podcast that we paid particular attention to in the official Lost podcast is I actually submitted a question to them. And the question that I asked them was how much of what happens on the message boards and what we talk about, like all this rambling and stuff, how much of that is influencing the writers? So they came back and they answered this question, and they said that Damon Lindelof kind of started off and he said the boards are a really good place to complain. They said people don't really talk about things that they love on the show. So he said as a writer, they'll go look at some of these message boards, and they said a lot of the negative responses and stuff will get really toxic and start to maybe affect them, the way they think about things. But they did say that they really liked the fuselage. They said that they thought it was a great place where people gave a lot more constructive criticism and stuff like that.
It's really rare that you see people get all uptight and start getting, you know, sort of, you know, aggro.
Yeah, and I don't really see too much kind of toxicity in a lot of the forums.
I think the IMDb board does tend to go that way.
But he said, you know, they're always interested in what the fans think. They said the writers will look at the message board just to kind of see how close people are getting to really the truth.
Well, the writers need to listen to the show, and they don't have to waste their time.
But there were two things. Carlton Cuse really got into answering the question, and he basically said that there are a couple things that have happened on Lost that happened specifically because of things that people were saying. He said that the first couple episodes of this season, they really revealed a lot of the Hatch stuff, what's inside and all that stuff. You remember all those podcasts we had where there were just tons of clues to dig into?
Yeah.
Because they said they saw a real need coming out of the message boards of people to get more information about the Hatch. So they did that.
Awesome.
They also said that they created the orientation film specifically to fill
watch, or you know, people who watch the show in more on the history of the island. They said that was totally born out of people wanting to know more about the history of the island.
I wonder if they stopped having Jack Cry in the Jungle because of an online need.
It's possible. But they also said too, they brought up some interesting things. They said in their podcast, this official podcast, this last one, they said pay attention to the Honda Foundation website. Yeah. So they knew that some of these updates were going to be happening.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting thing too.
And I've got another kind of crazy lost link. There's a guy, and we'll post this link on the ABC forums, who is saying that his name is Kentaro Washiro. And he is a guy who's posing as an insurance adjuster for the Hanzo Foundation, and he's taking questions out there. And he's got a really interesting.
They gotta have insurance, even if you're an evil global organization. Still have to have insurance.
And his
Zanzibar law.
Zanzibar. And how he explains what this insurance adjuster finally tells us the story on the island. The island's actually, it only appears during a solar eclipse, and then it disappears to another dimension.
Interesting.
And it's only on the Earth where we can actually interact with it for 108 minutes. And they built a computer to keep the island from disappearing every 108 minutes. And he says right here, the plan is to develop a way to genetically engineer animals with the right quantum frequency so they can exist in this planet on their own. And he says that if you were standing on the island after the primary eclipse period ended and the 108 minutes were up, you'd feel a great big suck of air and then you'd fall right back into the ocean. Naked. And so you'll fall right
naked.
Back. Yes, you'll be naked in the ocean. And so I think what's going to happen is the series is going to end with a big and then all of our characters are going to be swimming around the ocean naked.
That's awesome. That's the best.
So we'll put this out. Go read it. It's really funny. The guy's got a really amazing sense of humor. He says stuff like, dude, and he talks in a way that you wouldn't, you know, that totally undermines his approach here.
Yeah.
But it's funny to go through and read that. It's probably one of the most hilarious threads I've read so far in this whole deal.
Well, we're going to bring up one other lost link that's out there that we're going to post is I think a lot of people were doing this. I know we were kind of joking around the office about this. Like after we saw the whole the Walt Michael possible talking on the computer, there were a lot of people that were making fun of it and saying, oh, this is like an instant message conversation. Yeah. They were doing like WTF, man, you know, all that stuff. So apparently at collegehumor.com, which is a humor website, someone created on there this little image that has like a little sequence of Michael and Walt talking. And they walk through all this funny stuff where like they say hello and it says like, you know, age, sex, location, you know, ASL question. And then Michael types in 45 male, what does he say, secret bunker. And then it says dad. And it says, you know, Michael's very concerned that Walt is talking to strangers on the internet. And the funny thing is someone posted this on the fuselage and people actually thought that they were posting it as a real thing. And they were saying, I don't remember that in the episode.
Oh, no.
So it's funny. We're going to post a link to it. It's a good time.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. We're not going to talk about the break again. We kind of went through what's going to be happening over the break. We'll talk about that
and start looking at the site about the 17th, and we'll know when we're going to be posting the next podcast.
Yeah, we'll still be. I would say too, even if we're only podcasting again before Christmas, we'll still be posting stuff on the site. And stuff like that. So we'll keep you updated on.
And I tend to creep around the comments section. So if anybody has any questions or wants to add anything, we're definitely active there. And we'll have more posts on the website in the meantime.
So we're gonna play Brian McMillan's spoiler cast now. He sent us a spoiler cast for this last one. And we'll see what Brian has to say. Here he is.
Hey, folks. Brian from Chicago here. 6 weeks, six painful weeks until the next loss. I can't believe it. I'm still getting over it. As a result of the six-week interlude, I am going to hold off on any sort of spoilers for the 23rd song, because I figure they'll heat up closer to the event itself. As you can imagine, this week, spoilers, rather thin on the ground. I know that Charlie's the upcoming Charlie-centric episode will feature child actors, as Charlie and his brother Liam, and I've got a couple of other things, but I kind of want to cover some retractions, and I'd like to make at least half of one for something I said a couple of weeks ago. I, for one, did not see Kate's dad have Saeed as a prisoner in What Kate Did. But my friend tells me that Saeed was on a video in the Army office. I confess I haven't seen it, but I also haven't watched it in slow motion. I haven't really examined it. But I have heard that. It's probably been talked about on this podcast, if it was there. For what it's worth, that picture, there is a picture of Saeed as a prisoner with an Army, a U.S. Army guy with a gun trained on him. That was in the promo pics for What Kate Did. Oh, well, I'm sure it'll show up somewhere. Damon Lindelof commented on the upcoming Jack episode, The Hunting Party, and said the title, The Hunting Party, was correct, but all of the other information that people had posted on it, notably, I suppose, that Jack's ex-wife, Julie Bowen, and the business about an Italian couple that would become recurring characters. Apparently that's false. He didn't say so explicitly, but he did say everything besides the fact that Jack's dad was there, the actor John Terry. Everything besides that was fiction. So that's how I read it. Javier also made an interesting retraction. He was talking, the most recent Lost magazine, he said that the people in the tail section have experienced the full wrath of the others and the monster, which really made me think. But then I guess later he retracted that and said, I quote, "The tailies never saw or felt the wrath of the monster and were never intended to!" Exclamation point. So I thought that was very interesting. Like, that's obviously important. He also said that about the Dharma Initiative, we're not going to get too much more of it, but it's all going to come at times when it's going to affect the characters the most. And I thought about that with this past week, with, they were watching the movie, and Michael and Walt, were communicating. I was like, oh, that's interesting. So maybe it will play that kind of role in the weeks to come. Also, a magazine relating to retractions, that reported that Mr. Echo was on the island before, it hasn't really been officially retracted. This was reported in a magazine, it was an interview with Adewale, and they said that Mr. Echo was a character that had been on the island before. Apparently, in Lost in the Forums land, they've said that this is fiction, it was just a mistake on the magazine's part. I haven't read any official magazine retractions, so I think that's still open to debate. One last prediction. I predict Community Service for Michelle Rodriguez and Cynthia Watros, and I predict a lot of, if what I see on Entourage is true, they're going to get yelled at by their agents and press agents quite a bit this week. Oh well. I guess that's all I've got for you this week, and I will be back online in the future. Thank you. Goodbye and stay lost.
So thanks to Brian for those comments. Again, he didn't go too much into spoilers for the next episode entitled 23 Psalm, which is an echo-centric episode. But he did, I think it's great, he's kind of digging out into some of the other media that's out there, looking at the magazines and stuff like that.
The Lost magazine. I've had a run-in with that magazine before. It's pretty weak. But they the whole magazine might have one interesting aspect to it. There are two things I forgot to mention so far that are kind of silly small things. One is Charlie. I meant to mention this back when we were talking about Mike talking to Walt, but Charlie's playing guitar on the beach, and he's playing two chords back and forth really quickly. And those are actually the same chords that are used to play the opening verse of Space Oddity by David Bowie. That's the song that goes in... ground control to Major Tom. Anyway, it's that part that he's playing at like double speed, and I thought that was interesting. Somebody who's cast out floating in space by himself trying to communicate.
Yeah.
And that we end up having Michael and Walt, or supposedly Walt, talk. And the other thing that kind of takes this whole, we talked earlier about the film being the two different clips of film not lining up and there being some consistency issues. And to put the show and consistency issues into sort of perspective, at the end of the show, just before we cut to Michael's, the final, the showing of the new clip and Michael talking to Walt, we have Ana Lucia and Jack sitting down having a tequila. And they cut to one shot of Ana Lucia from the side of her face where Jack's looking at her. And you see that curled up bang that usually gets in her eyes, sort of sitting there nice and locked down on her face. It cuts to Jack. He says one thing. It cuts back to her and the bang is gone. The Bang is like, pull tight, all of her hair is gone, and it goes back to Jack, it comes back, and the Bang reappears, and it's sitting right there on her face. There's no wind blowing. It doesn't look like there's any wind blowing. So
I think it's the monster.
So either Anna Lucia, I think Anna Lucia has magical hair.
She has magical bangs. Walt can remotely project himself, and she has bang control.
Well, a couple episodes ago, she could not control her bangs, and she shot Shannon.
She's a totally different person now.
I interrupted. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, I was thinking that you were going to go R-rated here with all the talk of banging.
No, thank you, Brian.
Thanks for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'll make a transition to horses. Though there was also a lot of speculation or a lot of talk in the forums that you could see the horse wrangler's. You could see the horse wrangler's hand off the side.
You could see his glove.
His glove.
Yeah. And so there are obviously minor issues. I think there are. It should give us a gauge on how far we should interpret these minuscule little inconsistencies. So with that said, guys,
we want to make sure we say before we leave again. Going to be taking a break in the podcast, but we'll keep you updated. We'll let you know when we're doing the podcast before Christmas, but send us all your comments, anything you want us to address then. We'll still be posting on the site, and people, I'm sure, will still be commenting and stuff. So
over the holidays, stay lost.
Stay lost.
Stay lost.
Adios.
See you, Billy's.